Welcome to Office Hours with Adam Peterson, where I talk to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts to find answers to those day-to-day questions about life and work in Luxembourg. If you have questions you'd like answered, let me know at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to today's show. When crossing the road in Luxembourg, you need to look out for not only cars, trams and scooters, but food delivery drivers on bikes, velos and motorbikes taking tasty treat to customers. But who are these people braving all weathers with an insulated rucksack on their back? And is it possible to make any money in what is known as the gig economy? To help me answer this question and more, I have two sides of the gig economy. From Volt, I have Henrik Pankakowski.
Hi, great to be here.
And I also have Edgar, a courier.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Welcome. So let me start with a few definitions, because I'm not sure there's exactly one fixed definition around the gig economy. An employee, I think people understand what an employee is, but then one, two, or all of the rest are often called the gig economy. So there's a contractor where someone will sell their fixed time to a company. So maybe you've got a 6-week contract and you'll work 40 hours a week for those 6 weeks. There's a freelancer. This is normally someone who does ad hoc scopes. I am a freelancer for RTL. So they either pay me by the hour to go and cover an event, or they give me a fixed amount for a deliverable such as this podcast. And then there's another category, which I'm going to call an on-demand worker, but it's sometimes called a platform worker. And that's where I think the Volt courier fits in. So it's where there is a certain need and a certain resource and people match that, such as getting a delivery. And I actually used to work this way a few years ago. I had a year out and I was coaching the school football team. And then I did some substitute teaching at the school. So if the teacher was sick, they would ring me in the morning and say, hey, Adam, can you watch these kids before you coach at football? So that's the time when I have been an on-demand worker. So I want to place that in the Luxembourg context. Now, gigexchange.com estimates the contribution to Luxembourg economy is 300 million euros from contractors, 200 million euros from freelancers, and 150 million euros from gig workers, although I couldn't work out how they'd made those estimates. But let's start there. So Edgar, let's start with you. What's your professional story and are you making 150 million euros?
I would like to make that money.
So where are you from originally? Tell me your backstory.
I'm from Mexico. I have a degree actually as an industrial engineer and I moved to Luxembourg 4 years ago.
Before or after the pandemic?
In the middle of the pandemic actually. We arrived to Luxembourg in the middle of the pandemic by the end of 2020.
So you say we, that was with your family?
With my wife.
Okay.
Yes, only with my wife.
So did she get a job in Luxembourg?
Yes, she got a promotion. And at that time, we were discussing about the possibility to live in abroad. Then we said, why not? Let's go to explore Luxembourg.
And did you know about the weather before you got here?
No, not at all. I'm missing the weather from Mexico.
So you arrived here 4 years ago as an industrial engineer, and you were working in Mexico at the time?
Yes.
So tell me about what happened when you arrived in Luxembourg.
Well, when we arrived to Luxembourg, it was difficult because it was a pandemic time. The first challenge that we have was find a nice apartment, which is kind of complicated.
And expensive.
And expensive in Luxembourg. The second challenge was my status that I got at that moment, my resident permit status. It was as family member. We didn't allow me to work in Luxembourg. After 2 years, there was a legislation that allowed us to work in Luxembourg without any extra proceed or sponsor. So at that moment, I knew that the fastest way to start making money was delivering.
Okay. So just take me back, though, before that change. So what did you do during the time before?
During that time, I was collaborating with my brother. He owns an e-commerce website in Mexico. So I was supporting him with data analytics, social media, customer support. And I was taking some courses, French courses, programming courses in Luxembourg. Yeah. And that's how I spent some of my time during that.
And then season. The change of the law happened and you thought, I could become a delivery courier?
Yeah, freelancer or independent courier. So I applied for my business permit as any freelancer in Luxembourg.
And what are the requirements for that business permit?
I cannot remember all of them at this moment, but one of them is no bankruptcy certificate, police record from your country.
So I set up in 2019, did the same thing. It was criminal record check for the last 10 years, no bankruptcy.
The same.
How long did that process take?
At that moment, actually, was a little bit quicker than the second time that I applied for the business permit. It took about 1 month. Okay. 1 month.
So why did you need to apply twice?
Because of my residence. I had to renew my residence after 2 or 3 years. So my business permit was linked to my resident permit when my first residence permit expired.
Henrik, turning to you, is Edgar's story of being a trailing spouse who third country national, is that a typical story for people who deliver for Volt and in Luxembourg?
So I think it's definitely like, let's say, one common type of story, but there's couriers from various different kinds of backgrounds and situations. Maybe the one common element here is that, you know, he was looking for something that is quite flexible. You know, there's really no, like, let's say, big entry requirements, and the barriers to sort of doing deliveries are quite low. So, you know, it gives you a lot of flexibility and it's easy to start doing deliveries. So I think maybe that's the one common thread there.
My nephew used to deliver for Uber Eats and Amazon Fresh in London. So his story was that he joined an estate agent, bought himself a car to drive around being an estate agent, and then a week later, that estate agent then went through a downsizing, last in, first out. So he was then without a job. And he thought, I can start to be a courier with the car that I've done. So it was, for him, it was a between jobs activity that he did. We were talking a couple of episodes ago with Marianne and Tanner. And Marianne, who employs people who are refugees, was saying that a lot of the couriers in Luxembourg are actually refugees. Do you know any more about that?
So definitely we have many courier partners from international backgrounds, and you know, it's typically because, like I said, the barriers to entry or the barriers to deliver are very low, and you don't need, let's say, you don't necessarily need to have educational qualifications or understand the local language that well, or, you know, things like that. So I think it's great that we're able to provide those kinds of opportunities to people so that, you know, it's possible for them to, for, you know, have a job and earn.
Yeah, I think the one big difference, though, for my nephew's story, I asked him about the process he had to go through in the UK. He said it was online and took him 15 minutes. But your bureaucracy seems to be a little bit more difficult than that, Edgar.
Yeah. Actually, it was more difficult. Once I was allowed to work in Luxembourg, I had to apply to the business permit, which took about 1 month. And after that, I had to apply also to pay my contributions. I have to register to the CCS. Yes.
CCSS, Social Security.
To pay for my contributions, retirement and Social Security contribution, which took me about 2 weeks, something like that. So
Henrik, Luxembourg, Let's Make It Happen is our logo. Are we making this happen, or are we on an extreme here?
To me, it definitely sounds like it's at the end where, you know, the process take a bit longer than many of the other countries. So I think typically we're talking about, like you said, you know, hours or days if you want to either set up your company or start working as an independent contractor. So I would say typically the process is quicker and smoother if you want to, you know, do that kind of work.
But you in Germany, though, I believe you employ the couriers directly.
Yes.
So why have you made that decision in Germany and not in Luxembourg?
So for when we've been launching new countries, what we want to provide and achieve is really flexibility. So whether, you know, it's through contractors or employees, it doesn't really make a big difference for us. So if there's a country where the employment law is sort of flexible enough that it enables these types of work, where you can log in when you want, do as many deliveries as you like, and then log off whenever you feel like, if the law allows for that, then we're, you know, let's say, more open to employment than in those kinds of countries.
So then let's bring it back to the real story then. So How does the algorithm work and how do they get paid? What's the mechanism or on what qualities do the couriers get paid?
If I think about the basic principle, it's that we want to make sure that the couriers are compensated for the effort that they put into making one individual delivery. And it's composed of different types of elements. So it's, you know, usually there's some sort of a base fee that, you know, you start the delivery, then there's an addition based on a distance. There could be that we know that this restaurant, when you drive, you need to park your vehicle a bit longer away. So we know there's a bit of time to walk to the restaurant, so we might compensate for that. So it's basically the idea is that, you know, you see a task and there's a euro amount that you're compensated for the time and effort it sort of takes for you to do that delivery. That's the basic principle.
I think I understand that as a courier, Edgar, you get pinged a potential job and you have the choice to refuse it or take it. Is that right?
Is that right? It is your decision if you accept the task that you are getting at that moment, or if you reject the task and wait for the next one.
And how quickly do you have to respond to accept that task or not? There must be a time limit, otherwise someone's order is like hanging inside of cyberspace and not being processed.
I think it depends. Sometimes you have to be faster to accept the order. Otherwise, you are going to miss the order. But usually you have about 1 minute to accept or reject the order.
And how many do you feel that you accept and reject? I mean, what would cause you to reject one, for example?
In my case, I'm not rejecting too many orders. Let's say maximum one per day, or even zero.
Okay, and how many orders do you do on a typical day?
Between 20 and 25. Of course, it depends of how long I'm online. It is proportionally linked to the hours that you are online, that the amount of orders you are going to get.
And you choose to go online, do you, more around the lunch times? How do you decide when you're going to go
online?
Peak times.
Yes. Trying to cover the lunch time and then dinner time. Lunch time to me is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and dinner time from 5:30 to 9:30.
Yeah. What would you do in a typical afternoon then?
In my life.
Yeah. When you're not online, you're not waiting for that delivery. What is the life of a courier like?
Well, it might vary, of course. My wife is usually working from home. So if I'm not delivering, I'm spending some time with her. I'm also having some courses. I just started my Luxembourgish language course 2 weeks ago.
Tip top.
Yeah, tip top. I'm also working in some personal project, or as I mentioned before, collaborating with my brother.
Your brother.
Yeah.
And is there anything you can do to maximize the likelihood of getting an order? I seem to see a lot of people hanging around the restaurants. Are you more likely to get an order if you're a courier who's next to the restaurant? If you live above McDonald's, are you going to get more orders? How does that work?
Yeah, so the way it works that when a customer places an order, we try to find the best way to fulfill that order. So let's say that, so if you're close to a restaurant that receives a lot of orders, it's more likely that you would receive an order from that restaurant. So if you're, let's say, near a busy restaurant, it's more likely that you would get more orders in general. And on the contrary, let's say that you're in Luxembourg and you're somewhere in outskirts of the city, it's a bit less likely because there's less restaurant, less orders. And if there was an order from the city center, it would take you a long time to get there. And you might be sort of, we would be unable to fulfill the customer sort of delivery time promise in that case. So
when you're working, Edgar, do you go and position yourself close to where the restaurants are?
Yes, we have spots where you know you'll be more able to get orders.
And what mode of transport do you use?
I use car, my car.
Use your car.
And sometimes I use also my scooter, two wheels.
Yeah.
Trottinette.
Yeah, a trottinette scooter, I know what you mean. Yeah. So you don't use the Velo. One reason I thought that Volt came to Luxembourg was because the colour of the Volt matched the colour of the Velos, but that's just a rumour, right? That's not true.
No, not in this case.
Great. So we've covered on how the orders are paid. We've also covered on how you claim the order, then one question I've got that I don't really know the answer to is quite chewy, but should you tip? On one hand, the French culture, when you go to a restaurant, service compris, you don't necessarily tip. On the other hand, these poor folks are cycling velos and bikes and trottinettes at -5 degrees in the snow. So, and some people think, huh, I've paid for the meal, I've paid for delivery, why should I tip on top? So, Edgar, I think I know what you might say. So what would you say to people around tipping?
It is very appreciable when customer is tipping us. And what I can say is that to your audience or the potential customers of Bolt is that our income depends on how many deliveries we are making per day. So if you think that the service that you got during the delivery process of your order deserves a tip, it'll be super appreciable for us.
And all the tips stay with the couriers, is that right?
Yeah, 100% of the tips go to the courier partners.
And what are the mechanisms that people can tip?
So you can either tip when you're placing an order, or then after you receive the order, you can also tip after receiving it. So both are possible.
And is it okay to tip in cash as well?
You can, of course, choose to do that, but it's probably easier through the app.
There's something that I can say about it. I used to make deliveries for another company, another platform, and they didn't have this system where you can tip through the app. The only way that you could get tips was in cash. So it was a big difference about tipping when I joined to Bolt, because, you know, these days almost no one is carrying cash.
I look in my wallet, I've got a 50 euro note, and you know, whilst it's cold, I'm not going to give you the 50 euro note for bringing me a pizza, right?
Yeah, so
one, let's say, complication if we talk about tipping after the purchase, it could be that the delivery is late, but it's not the fault of the courier partners, because it might have well been that the restaurant is late. So that's why we also have both options available for customers.
Great, thank you. So we know a bit about Edgar and the lives of the couriers. We know a bit about how the system works. So we'll take a quick break and then we'll get back to a big chewy question. This episode of Office Hours is sponsored by the delivery platform Volt, bringing you delicious food and whatever you need to your home or office in 30 minutes. Try Volt today with the discount code OfficeHours, in one word, all capitals, for 50% off on your first purchase with Volt. Download the app in the App Store or go to volt.com. Bon appetit. So welcome back. In part one, we looked at the mechanics of the gig economy and platform work. In part two, we'll dig into one of the hot topics. Before we do, I want to share some stats. So the EU estimates there are 28 million platform workers in 2022, the same as manufacturing, and expects it to grow to 43 million in 2025. So this is a big portion of the economy. Of that, 35% are taxi drivers and 25% are delivery couriers like Volt. EU estimates that 19% are classified as self-employees when they should be classified as employees. So the big question is, are they employees? So Edgar, do you work for other delivery companies as well?
Yes. Usually I'm delivering for Bolt like 90% of my time, but I'm also able to deliver for another companies like, can I say the...
Of course you can, yeah.
Widely. And I used to deliver for Ghosty as well. I started delivering for Ghosty.
Oh, you started with Ghosty?
Ghosty.
Okay. Yeah. My nephew used to deliver too as well. He used to deliver for Amazon Fresh and Uber Eats as well. In 2021, WeDeli's parent company were fined for its couriers not having the correct business permits. On one level, I found that strange. Surely it should be up to the company to make sure that they've got business permits. But then on the other, I thought, no, this makes sense. When I was in the oil and gas industry, we would have to do due diligence on our subcontractors to make sure that they had the right things in place. Henrik, would it not just be easier to have them as employees and not do the due diligence and all the paperwork that is involved to make sure that they have the paperwork in place as an independent company?
Yeah, so I think this is a really interesting topic. I think this type of, let's say, platform work really didn't exist when even like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So I think that's why all these, let's say, regulatory questions are really interesting. I think when you think about delivery work, You can do it either as an employee or a courier partner. The main difference between these models is the type of flexibility that you have. So if you think about couriers who are contractors, they can work whenever they want, how long they want. They can work with competitors at the same time, so or even at the same time. So you could have your vault open while you're driving a taxi, for example. So the freedoms are very different, but I think it's possible to be like an employee or a courier or a contractor. So, for example, in Germany, like you mentioned earlier, we have employed courier partners because the employment law is so flexible that it allows for that.
Those employees, they can't accept an order for the equivalent of German Weedeli when they're working for Volt, because their time is allocated to you whilst they're working. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so the flexibility enables Edgar to do his studying during the afternoon, work on his course. If he sees a few offers come on, some deliveries come on because things are picking up, he can then jump in his car and go make the deliveries. And as an employee, that flexibility wouldn't be there.
Yep.
I also understand that the EU have some legislation that's coming in place in 2 years' time. Is that likely to change gig work in Luxembourg?
So I don't necessarily think it's going to change, but we actually, as a company, we think it's a good thing that we have more regulation coming, because currently in many countries there's not enough clarity on sort of what is the difference, because this type of work is so new. So that, you know, I think having these clear rules about, you know, what is employment, what is being a contractor, I think that will actually be a good thing, because that right now we're sort of in this space where it's up to each country define a bit sort of how it looks like, and the interpretations can differ a lot for country. So we're actually looking forward to having this clarity as a company.
I'm actually surprised. I thought you wouldn't be looking forward to it. So I'm almost surprised by that answer. My worry, I mean, speaking personally, is my worry is that we regulate ourselves out of competition. And, you know, productivity in the EU isn't doing well. If I think about my nephew who signed up in 15 minutes online in the UK versus Edgar's a whole month of getting paperwork done here, I think that this type of work does offer the flexibility. And we didn't dwell on it a lot, but when we were off air a couple of weeks ago talking with Marianne, she was saying how good the courier work was, you know, for Volt and other companies, in providing an opportunity for refugees who have come to Luxembourg to work, and saw it as critical and a real positive impact on society, which is not what I was expecting to say before I walked into these interviews. So I have learned a lot. I also hope that our listeners have learned a lot as well. But I think it's right to give the last word to Edgar. So Edgar, what do you see your future? Do you see your future staying in courier work for a lot longer? How do you see it panning out?
The last year was the launch of Volt in Luxembourg, and it was, I have to say, pretty good for me. I was able to make good money. This year, maybe I will retake my job seeking, but I know I have to work in language. It is complicated for a non-multilingual speaker in Luxembourg to find a job.
I bet you've got at least one more language than me, though. So your Spanish is probably good, right?
Yeah, I speak Spanish. Yes, I'm planning to retake my job seek. Job market in Luxembourg, it's a little bit complicated in my career. There's not too many industries. But the incredible thing that is that I can retake my job seek during I'm doing deliveries for Volt. I don't have to quit to Volt, and I can still make money while I'm looking for something.
Yeah, and whilst I said I'll give you a last word, I'm going to go back on that promise, because I think I've been a hiring manager lots, and if I saw a CV that came to me and someone had been doing courier work when they were between jobs, it would show to me that they're willing to work hard, they've got some get up and go. They can also deal with some bureaucracy, which they need to do. And I would see it actually a positive thing to have on someone's CV if they were applying for a job. So if people like what they hear from you, Edgar, and they want to get in contact, how would they do that?
They can contact me through LinkedIn, Edgar Sendejas, or my Instagram as well.
Okay, and how would you spell your surname there?
Just Zendejas.
Perfect. And Henrik, you're covering the whole of...
Baltics, Nordics and Luxembourg as well.
So if people want to get in contact with you, would you tell them to get in contact with Thomas Echeverry, who was on our, the country manager who was on our episode a few weeks ago, or should they contact you?
You can, of course, get in touch with me. If you want to know more about Vault or try the service, I would recommend downloading the app or going to our website. If you're a restaurant owner, a business owner, or you want to work with us as a courier partner, so that's the easiest way.
So thank you both very much, and thank you to the listener.